The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
What better clip to start off an exciting week with? So much in the news, so much will be happening this week. It's going to be a big news week. And of course, we're coming to you on a big day for God's church as well, December 7th. The 31st anniversary of the Philadelphia Church of God. Good Monday, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. As I say, it's a big week. We're in the midst of a big week for the church. Yesterday, through the weekend, we had the advertising campaign that was going on Newsmax. I think all totaled, Edwin was telling me this morning that the article, my father's article, Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President, it's received nearly 100,000 unique page views just since it was published. And as best we can tell, I think about 78,000 of those users or the users that have come to the website have come as a result of this ad campaign. So it has definitely brought quite a lot of attention to the Trumpet.com website, to the church, and of course to this specific article. There's a piece, by the way, in the International Business Times. I don't know too much about this publication. It's, I don't think, a huge publication, but the title, it's about our article. It says, forget election results. This biblical preacher insists that Trump will continue as U.S. president. So as I say, it's some exciting developments in the lead up to our December 7th anniversary. And it's very hard to believe that it, as I was saying to a few people over the weekend, that it's been 31 years since my father was fired for standing up for the truth, for holding fast to the truth, for holding fast to the teachings of Herbert Armstrong. And when you look back over that 31 years of history, when you look at the years of litigation from 1997 on through to 2003 that resulted in us getting Mystery of the Ages and all of these other books and booklets by Herbert W. Armstrong, the correspondence course, his autobiography, all of it, it's certainly a glorious history in so many ways. It's obviously had its difficult moments, The litigation being one of them, for sure. But I think what's so especially fascinating about that history, particularly when you look at the early years of that history, is to see what's happening in our nation, the United States of America, and Great Britain to a lesser extent, but to see what's happening in our nations. And really, you have an almost exact parallel of the way that Satan the devil went after the church, the way that he attacked spiritual Israel, and then the way that he's attacking the nations of Israel today. That would be primarily the United States and Britain. And you see him working the exact same way in so many different ways, in so many different areas. This will be a big week with respect to the election fraud that now is a little over a month behind us. Lots of litigation and finally the Supreme Court. There was an announcement made Friday coming from Sam Alito's office, the Supreme Court Justice, that he's going to be taking up this case on Act 77 from Pennsylvania, and we'll get into that a little bit later and explain it all. But here you have that playing out, even as Joe Biden continues to plan for a presidency that will never be. It says, I mean, if you think about really the announcement he made on Friday, it's just perfect given what we're witnessing, not just in the last month, but all through the course of this year. You have a fake president preparing now for a fake inauguration, complete with a fake audience. This, as I say, it's perfect. You can't make this, you cannot make this up. It's perfect. It really is perfect that Joe Biden on Friday would come out and say that his inauguration would be a virtual event. This is clip 11.
A lot of people are wondering what your inauguration is going to look like, considering
so much,
considering that we are still in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic.
It is highly unlikely there'll be a million people on the mall going all the way down to the memorial. But I think you're going to see something that's closer to what the convention was like than typical inauguration. But my guess is you'll see a lot of virtual activity in states all across America.
A lot of virtual activity for the inauguration. An inauguration, really, the meaning there is virtually no audience to speak of. He had his Thanksgiving address. That was just a couple weeks ago. And there were about 1,000 people that watched online. 1,000! 1,000 Americans! This is, we're told, this is the most popular president or vice president or president-elect, whatever you want to call them, in the history of the United States. 80-some million votes? 12 million more votes than Barack Obama at his best? And 1,000 people watched his Thanksgiving address. 1,000 people out of 330 million Americans. Just this past Saturday night, President Trump held a rally in Georgia, and Right Side Broadcasting had 250,000 viewers at its peak. 250,000. And then you had Fox News. They were streaming it, and they had something like 40,000. I mean, that in itself, that comparison in itself is a story. People are fleeing Fox News, and they're going over for more conservative alternatives. Right Side Broadcasting, Newsmax, The Epoch Times, the OAN, 250,000 people watching online. And then, of course, you had thousands and thousands of people at the rally itself cheering on President Trump. This is a politician, Donald Trump, the businessman turned politician. This is a political force. He's not going away. He's there in front of this large crowd in Georgia. And what did the crowd do when he announced these two Republican senators who are in the runoff on January the 5th? This was their strongest moment, their loudest moment. Fight for Trump, they said. Fight for Trump. I think there's more than a few Georgians who believe that Loeffler and Perdue haven't fought as hard for Donald Trump as he's fighting for them. And you see this over and over again in the Republican Party. These Republicans, when they're coming up for re-election, suddenly they're strong supporters of Donald Trump. They want to get in on the wave, the red wave. And then as soon as they get into office, they turn out to be like Governor Kemp in Georgia or Secretary Raffensperger. Suddenly, they want to get rid of Trump. They're more loyal to the old establishment. Here's Donald Trump from his rally Saturday night, clip 2.
If I lost, I would say I lost, and I'd go to Florida, and I'd take it easy, and I'd go around, and I'd say I did a good job. But you can't ever accept when they steal and rig and rob. Can't accept.
That's the president saying, look, and he's right too. Look at what he has to fall back on. He's a billionaire. He's got all of these resorts. He could retire to Florida. His wife's a former supermodel. He's got a family that loves him. Why go on and subject himself to all of this abuse, to all of these attacks? He continues because he knows this is a monstrous fraud. He knows he was cheated. He knows that they stole this. They rigged it. And so he continues the fight. One more clip from Saturday, clip 3.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. And we will never back down. We will never, ever surrender.
Wow, that's... I think that gives us a pretty good indication of what he's preparing for in the weeks ahead. He is not going to bend or break. He will not yield. And he has the support of the ordinary Americans. He doesn't have the support from a lot of Republicans even. But he certainly has the support of people like what you just saw at that rally. And the ones that are tuning in by the tens of thousands, by the hundreds of thousands, to watch those rallies. When have political rallies ever been so popular as they have been with Donald Trump? Whether it's that one this past Saturday night or the ones in the lead up to the election. Who can forget? Who can forget the images coming out of that Pennsylvania town just north of Philadelphia? 58,000 people. Working class Americans. He fights for them, and they want those working class people, they want others in the Republican Party to fight for him. He's not getting so much support. Secretary of State Raffensperger, we've talked a fair bit about him over the past week. He was on with George Stephanopoulos. He interviews with CNN last week, and then he's over at ABC with all of these radical leftists in the media. And Stephanopoulos is there saying, you know, the president's called on you and Governor Kemp to call for a special session at the state legislature to look into this fraud. Can you, Stephanopoulos says, can you just explain to our audience how and what he's doing and why it's wrong? Can you tell our audience why President Trump should just throw in the towel? Why he should give up? And meanwhile, you've got all of these irregularities. You've got all of these dead people voting. You have the case in DeKalb County. There was a story on this just over the weekend where they can't find the ballot transfer forms, the so-called chain of custody. They can't find it. There's so many things that have gone missing. Glitches that have happened here and there. Counting that continued when all of the poll watchers were told to go home. A water main break that never happened. You would think they'd want to call a special session just to set the minds at ease of those in their own state. But they won't do it. Here's the Secretary of State again with Stephanopoulos yesterday, clip 4.
Your office has investigated claims of fraud. What have they found?
We've never found systemic fraud, not enough to overturn the election.
This is just incredible to me, and I'm repeating a little bit of what I said last week, but we didn't find it, you know, the systemic fraud anyway. It used to be there was no fraud whatsoever. Most perfect election in the history of the United States. Now it's not systemic fraud. Now it's, well, it's there's some fraud, but there's not enough to overturn the results. You see how they keep changing the goalposts. But this story from Fox News last week where he's talking about all these investigations into the upcoming election because he has clear evidence of fraud. Unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable. Fox said last week, Raffensperger for weeks has issued warnings against efforts to register individuals who are ineligible to vote in Georgia's runoff elections or to encourage people to come to Georgia with the sole purpose of casting ballots. And then this whopper, it says Raffensperger was said Wednesday, this is just last week, that his office has received specific evidence that these groups have solicited voter registrations from ineligible individuals who have passed away or live out of state. He has the evidence. He has specific evidence. So when it's to get a couple more establishment Republicans into the Senate, I mean, they really reimpose some tough conditions. They reimpose some strict rules. But if it's an election that finally gets rid of Donald J. Trump, well, then it was perfect. Everything was totally secure. What was it that Chris Krebs had to say on that CBS interview? We played that, I believe, Friday, clip 12.
I did it right. We did it right. This was a secure election.
That's the guy that headed up the cybersecurity branch of DHS. This was a secure. How does he know all that happened in Las Vegas? He was fired less than 2 weeks after the election, and he knows what was happening in Vegas or Atlanta or Philadelphia. Has he talked to that truck driver that brought all those ballots across state lines? Well, what about Detroit? What about Milwaukee? He says, I did it right, as if he's presiding over all of those local elections, all of those Democrat machines, all of those corrupt cities. He said on November the 12th, I believe, that the presidential election was the most secure election in American history. As I told you last week, just a bald-faced lie. The most secure in history. And the more these people talk, by the way, you see just how much of a smooth operator they are. People like Krebs, Sam was saying this morning, reminds them a lot of Jim Comey. They get fired, and then they go on and they become a celebrity. He's probably going to be hired as a contributor to MSNBC or CNN in just a few days. Admittedly, he has the looks and the voice for television. But here he comes and says it's the most secure in history. And he's been on the television, on the news shows, nonstop ever since he was fired. Here's what he had to say yesterday on one of the Sunday shows, clip 5.
It is well past the time where all leaders of the Republican Party need to accept the outcome of this race and move on and accept that Joe Biden is the president-elect. It is time for leaders in the national security community and in the Republican Party to stand up, to accept the results, and move forward. We cannot allow this to continue. Certainly not past January 20th, certainly not for the next 4 years. Any sort of lost cause movement would be just horribly destructive to democracy.
Yeah, it's just destroying democracy, trying to get to the bottom of all this fraud. The Republican Party just needs to accept it. Do you think for a moment that the Democrat Party would have accepted a Biden loss if ballots just showed up in the dark of night for Donald Trump? Do you think for a second that Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer would then come out the very next day and say, well, you know what? It was a tough loss, but we're just going to have to move on. You know that's not true. You know that wouldn't happen. And the reason we know this is because they wouldn't even accept 2016. They fought it and they fought it and they fought it for 4 years. They're continuing to fight it. That's what this voter fraud is all about. It's just the latest round. The latest round of trying to unlawfully overturn the results of 2016. And they've had so much success, and they have so many allies in the media, in big tech, with cable news, well, right across the board. But they may not have the strongest of allies at the Supreme Court, and this is something my father touched on in the article that we've been promoting. Listen to this clip from Rudy Giuliani. He came down with the Chinese flu yesterday, So that'll be interesting too. It's not, I mean, it is not easy for this administration. It's one obstacle after another. So he's going to be, I guess, quarantining himself for a while. But before that was announced yesterday, he was on TV, and this is what he had to say, clip six.
We're getting heard in the state legislatures, and once they make a decision, we'll get heard in the Supreme Court.
Now, what he explained over the weekend, it was just a short clip there, state legislatures, and then once they make a decision, we'll be heard at the Supreme Court. So he's expressed frustration with what some of these lower-level judges have done or have not done by just dismissing cases and not even hearing witnesses. And as Giuliani explained over the weekend, that's why he pressed so hard for these hearings in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, because he just wanted the witnesses to be heard. He wanted the evidence to get out there. He's got all the affidavits, as we've been pointing out. But he went around so many of those courts. And then it's interesting, isn't it? All right, once the state legislatures, once they make their decisions, then we're gonna be heard at the Supreme Court. And that happens as early as tomorrow, as I'll get to here in just a second. Let me refer you first to my father's article, Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President. He says, Justice Barrett's, now she's on the Supreme Court too, she's the newest justice on the panel. He says, Justice Barrett's nomination could prove decisive in this election and to Mr. Trump remaining president. After the election, attorneys across America, including Mr. Trump's lawyers, filed lawsuits in several states alleging voter fraud. It's likely that some of these cases will end up in the Supreme Court. I don't know, but I would think the Supreme Court is going to have to rule on this election eventually. The fact that Justice Barrett will be there when that happens increases the odds that the law will be upheld. It increases those odds. It says, and that would make all the difference for the president. I would think that this is the way God is going to solve this, but he may have other ideas, so we don't know for sure, but we've certainly been keeping our eyes on the Supreme Court. And Amos 7 does indicate that President Trump is going to have some support from the highest court in the land. So Judge Alito makes this announcement on Friday, saying that he's going to take up this case. Now, the Supreme Court, they hear about 1% of the petitions that are filed at that level. In most cases, in the overwhelming majority of cases, those cases that are submitted to the Supreme Court, they just stand where they were at the appellate level. The court can't possibly hear every single case, so it just picks the ones, the few, that it has the most intense interest in, the ones that are the most significant, and in a lot of cases, the ones that probably need to be overturned. Now, that's, again, a little speculative on my part, but doesn't it seem like it's strange that once the Pennsylvania Supreme Court just smacked down this case on Act 77 and dismissed it and said, without prejudice, so it can't even be reheard in Pennsylvania. So is the Supreme Court coming along this week to just say, yeah, you know, we agree with the Pennsylvania people, so we got to dismiss this? Or, this is Sam Alito, he's a pretty conservative justice. Is he preparing to do something that would overturn what just happened at the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania? I just want to give you a little bit of background because I know everyone listening to this program, for the most part, is like me. You know, we're not lawyers, and it's hard to kind of keep track of the ins and outs of all of these legal arguments. But to just give you a little bit of background, there was a piece last year, November 1st of 2019, about Pennsylvania overhauling its election rules. It says, overhaul of election laws finds bipartisan support in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. So keep in mind, as we go through some of this history, that this was months before the Wuhan flu came along. This was months before the China virus. And here is the state of Pennsylvania, just a year before the U.S. election, overhauling its election laws. Governor Tom Wolf, he's a radical leftist. He said, this is the biggest change to our elections in generations and will strengthen our democracy by removing barriers to the voting booth and encouraging more people to vote by removing barriers. It's basically saying, tear down the laws. Get rid of any restrictions that would eliminate voter fraud. And when you have a radical leftist saying this is the biggest change in generations and it's going to strengthen our democracy, you know it's going to do exactly the opposite. This is from the article. It says the law eliminates a requirement that applicants for absentee ballots provide an excuse as to why they can't make it to the polls. That's the way it was with absentee ballots. Like we've talked about with so many states here in Europe, it's very strict. You have to really prove that you're unable to make it to the polling booth on election day. And what Pennsylvania did a little over a year ago is they just removed all of that and basically said anyone and everyone can get an absentee ballot. Anyone can get a mail-in ballot. And this is well before anyone ever even heard of COVID-19. It says here, this is from CNN last November. It also allows those ballots to be requested or sent in up to 50 days before the election and to be submitted by 8 p.m. on election day. Now, later on, they even changed that. And they added days after the election. And I'll come to that in just a second. But it says, giving the state the longest mail-in ballot period in the country, it was important, the senator said, to ensure that no one's left out. See, we've got to start voting 2 months before. And then, of course, when they had COVID-19 as a pretext to establish or to involve all of these fraudulent measures, then they said, well, hey, we need to count them for after as well. And then remember, red wave, don't be deceived on election night. It could take some days before enough ballots roll in to finalize this. And then it'll be the blue wave. I mean, they told us all of this. They told us what they were going to do. And Vice President Biden literally told us the greatest, the most extensive, most inclusive election fraud organization in history. He didn't mean to say that, but he said it. He said it. What a slip. What a slip up, if ever there was one. So so last year, they have all of this, any kind of mail-in voting goes, and it's going to be open. I mean, 2 months window, 2 months. This is Mark Levin last night. I thought he did an excellent job of just explaining what was illegal and not allowed as little as 14 months ago. Think about all that has changed dramatically. So, and this is just one state. And there's other states like Nevada and others, Georgia, obviously. They were changing rules right up until the election. Pennsylvania is just the worst of the lot. Here's Mark Levin on his TV show last night, clip 13.
14 months ago in the state of Pennsylvania, if you had voted by mail-in ballot, it would have been discarded. If that mail-in ballot had been counted, that would have been fraud. 14 months ago in the state of Pennsylvania, if you sent in a ballot without a signature, that ballot would be discarded. If it was counted, that would be criminal fraud. 14 months ago in the state of Pennsylvania, if you sent in a ballot with a signature that didn't match a signature that they had on file, that would be discarded. If it was counted, that would be criminal fraud. 14 months ago in the state of Pennsylvania, if you sent in a ballot beyond Election Day, it wouldn't be counted. And if it was, that would be fraud. If you sent in a ballot without a postal stamp date on it, it wouldn't be counted. And if it was, that would be fraud. Or if you send in a ballot where they couldn't tell what the date was, because maybe there was a smudge on the ink, it wouldn't be counted. And if it was counted, that was fraud. All of those ballots today count.
They all count because, as Governor Wolf explained last year when he was so excited about this new legislation, all those barriers are removed. So you can just make it up. Ballots can just show up out of anywhere. As long as you don't have to check identification or signature matches, any of that. Anyone in the world that's dealt with any kind of election would tell you that this just opens the way to rampant fraud. So what Levin went on to explain is this bill, it was tacked onto the Act 77. It was tacked onto a bill back in October of 2019. That's where he gets the 14-month window, or 14 months ago. All of these things, it wouldn't have been allowed. They would have been thrown out for sure. So Governor Wolf, in that article from CNN a year ago, he was talking about how that, yeah, this all these changes, there's bipartisan support, which means that Republicans in the state legislature, they caved in to pressure from these radical leftists. But in doing so, the entirety of the legislature was violating the Constitution of the state of Pennsylvania. So the whole thing was unconstitutional from the very beginning. The Constitution lays out clear guidelines that if you're going to change the way we vote, well, the people of Pennsylvania need to have a say about that. They need to be able to vote on it. They need to be aware of what's happening. As it was, the state legislature just ramrodded its way through all of these changes. And then the radical leftist governor, he was cheering. Oh, I mean, this is great. This is great for democracy. In fact, it just eliminated all the rules. And that's what the Democrats want. That's what the radical left wants. They don't want rules. They don't want laws. The ends justify the means. They want to be able to do whatever they can do to overturn the results of 2016 in this case. And they definitely did do it. Governor Wolf, by the way, after he signed this act, Act 77, then a few months later, of course, the Chinese virus comes along, and he wanted to even get rid of more rules. He wanted to allow for, like I said, they added the 3 days after the election, that ballots could, there was no deadline even, November 3rd, 2020, the presidential election, I mean. So anyway, they have this unconstitutional act. Then they add rules or take away rules to the act that was there. And then, you know, leading up to the presidential election, that's where the Supreme Court, before Amy Coney Barrett, weighed in on this. And John Roberts, siding with the liberals, basically just allowed it all to happen. This was from National Review. This was about a week and a half or maybe a week before the election on the Supreme Court, just letting, you know, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. I think what happened is when Governor Wolf went back to the legislature to say, look, I also want these rules added to Act 77, the legislature by that point said, well, no, you can't do that. So fine, they got a little bit of a backbone then. But what happened after that is Governor Wolf's team then went to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, yeah, these new rules are fine. So you've got all these new rules, or lack thereof, added to legislation that was unconstitutional to begin with. I mean, it's just flawed from beginning to end. And then the Supreme Court, making matters worse, the Supreme Court of the United States, I mean, they basically say, well, let Pennsylvania do what it wants. Never mind how it impacts the election. This was from National Review before the election. It says the Supreme Court lets Pennsylvania's elected Democrat judges rewrite the law. It says, worse, defying basic principles of interpreting statutes, the Pennsylvania court not only rejected the deadline That's the November 3rd deadline, but disregarded the explicit instruction by the Pennsylvania legislature in Act 77, a law signed by the state's Democratic governor in 2019, that if any part of the carefully crafted bipartisan compromise was invalidated, the entire thing, including its provisions for mail-in voting, had to be invalidated. So this goes back to the legislation, which was faulty from the beginning, but even written within there, it said that if you alter this in any way, then the whole thing's invalidated. That's pretty amazing. So then we come to November 3rd, okay? Then you have all of this fraudulent activity. You have President Trump, who was ahead by 700,000-800,000 votes on election night. And then everything shuts down. And then by the time they resume counting officially, you see these races. You see these races tightening up. And then lo and behold, in the wee hours of the morning, November 4th, Biden takes the lead. Well, a Pennsylvania congressman by the name of Mike Kelly, following all of this, he files this lawsuit. This is after the fraudulent election. And he says that this Act 77, he says, look, it's unconstitutional what happened here. You can't do this without submitting it to the people of Pennsylvania. And never mind all the changes that Governor Wolf then came along later and made. So he gets this into a state appellate court, the one that this judge, Patricia McCullough, presided over. And this was all happening during the Thanksgiving break. I think I might have talked about it some, that Friday program over the break, or maybe the Monday after. But this judge, she comes out and rules in favor of Mr. Kelly and says that, yeah, there should be an injunction. The state can't certify. And I think he's right. I think he's going to win on the merits. This was one of a few courageous judges. This is from Patricia McCullough's ruling. She said, this was the Friday right after Thanksgiving, she said, petitioners appear to have established a likelihood to succeed on the merits because petitioners have asserted the Constitution, that would be the Pennsylvania Constitution, does not provide a mechanism for the legislature to allow for expansion of absentee voting without a constitutional amendment. See, that's where the people would have to have a say. To do this, to make these changes that you're suggesting in Act 77, you need to make a constitutional amendment. And you can only do that by letting the people have a say, letting the people have a vote on it. She says, petitioners appear to have a viable claim that the mail-in ballot procedures set forth in Act 77 contravene Pennsylvania's Constitution Article 7, Section 14, as the plain language of that constitutional provision is at odds with the mail-in provision of Act 77. Since this presents an issue of law which has already been thoroughly briefed by the parties, this court can state that petitioners have a likelihood of success on the merits of its Pennsylvania constitutional claim. She says, they're going to win. She said, Congressman Kelly's going to win this. So she calls for this hearing and so on. But rather than attending the hearing at this appellate court, the Pennsylvania Attorney General, Bockver, I think is her name, She goes around the appellate court straight to the state Supreme Court, where you have these five radical leftist judges. All of them voted into that position. Five of the seven. This is an activist court. And that activist court says, nope, this case is being brought too late. It didn't even address the merits of the case. It just focused in on, you can't bring it because, well, the election's over and we've just got to all move forward. It's over and done with. And as I said earlier, they made the decision without prejudice, which means that they can't, that this case can't even be heard again. So that's it. As far as the Supreme Court, unless the United States Supreme Court intervened, it was over and done with. And like I said, It's unusual. There's only a few cases that even make it into the U.S. Supreme Court. And added to that, it's all the more unusual for the United States Supreme Court to meddle in the affairs of a state, a state statute or state legislation. And then we come to the announcement from Justice Sam Alito's office on Friday, just a few days ago, December 4th. He says he's agreed to hear the case from this Pennsylvania Congressman Mike Kelly on Act 77. And then you have all the talking heads, you have all of the commentators on the blogs and the news sites speculating as to, well, what can this mean? What can this mean? Well, we don't know for sure. I'll again just refer you to what my father wrote in that article that we've been promoting. But some have said that, well, Alito at first said, get your filings in on December 9th, which was a day after the so-called Safe Harbor Day. That's tomorrow, December 8th, when December 14th is when the Electoral College is supposed to vote. Tomorrow, I believe, is when the states are to finalize the certification process. So there were commentators saying, well, Alito selected December 9th, the day after the certifications are announced, so that you know, he can kind of give Mr. Kelly his day in court, but he's not really serious about doing anything. This was all the wishful thinking of the leftist commentariat, the leftist commentators on TV. So then what made it, I think, even more interesting is over the weekend, Justice Alito announced that, well, I'm going to move up the deadline to December the 8th, as if he was listening to some of the commentary. So now that deadline is tomorrow. Here is Justice Alito taking up this case, and because it's the Supreme Court, and because it's involving something that could have been unconstitutional in Pennsylvania, and because it involves 20 electoral votes, it's not insignificant that this is happening. Now, as my father said, there's all kinds of lawsuits, lots and lots of litigation. The Supreme Court most likely is going to involve itself in some of those cases. And it looks like this may be one of them. Well, it is. He's leading the way, Justice Alito. So it'll be interesting. He didn't agree with Justice Roberts not doing anything before the election. He said that, or basically indicated that if it comes down to a contested election, it's really going to put the Supreme Court between a rock and a hard place. And yet, he's evidently prepared to look into this and even make a decision or make a ruling. I'll just conclude this segment with a little bit from the website Red State. It says, what many have correctly noted is that this safe harbor provision has no legal effect on what the Supreme Court can do if it were to find merit in any election challenge it chooses to hear. So the left, the commentators on the left that are out there saying December 8th is tomorrow, there's got to be certification, and then December 14th next week, that's the vote, everything, it's over, it's done with. Game over, everyone, game over, we've passed the deadlines. And what this commentator at Red State is saying is that, look, those deadlines, those so-called deadlines, they're not embedded into the Constitution. And if this does get hung up in court or held up in court, it could go beyond those dates. It says, until the Electoral College actually meets and votes, the court possesses the authority to issue an injunction preventing the electors from any particular state from being able to lawfully participate on the basis that the manner of their selection was legally invalid. And that's what happened here. The manner in which they were selected on November 3rd, it was illegal. Clearly, that's why none of the Democratic judges or lawyers are even willing to argue the merits, because they know they've gone about this illegally. They're just making it up as they go. The people have no say. The people have no say in it. And even when they change the rules on the fly, even against the Republicans in the legislature, they just ramrod their way through. It says, how should the U.S. Supreme Court respond to a state Supreme Court that has allowed itself to become captured by political interests? A state that elects the members of the court, which means that by manipulating the election process, the court's composition in favor of one political party will become a self-perpetuating reality. In other words, what should the U.S. Supreme Court do with this activist court that is the U.S., or rather the Pennsylvania Supreme Court? It says, is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and its conduct not the epitome of the politicization of the judiciary? I can certainly envision this as the moment in history where Justice Thomas, that would be Clarence Thomas, one of the other conservatives on the court, where Justice Thomas stepped forward to say, enough! That's really the only way all of this lawlessness is ever going to stop. If someone upholding the law steps forward and says, that's enough, that's enough. And my father goes on to make the point in his article that there should also be just punishment to stop this sort of thing for just going on and on and on. It says, but something I think the court could bring itself to do is simply declare the Pennsylvania contest voided. And to do so at such a time that prevents Pennsylvania from naming the electors to the Electoral College. That would shut the state out of the 2020 process of electing the next president. And there's plenty of people that would say, oh, this would never happen. Oh, if you did that, you're disenfranchising 2.6 million people. But of course, Congressman Kelly says, look, by allowing all of this lawlessness, by changing the rules, by changing the laws unconstitutionally, you're disenfranchising the whole of Pennsylvania. They're the ones, it's these corrupt leaders that have made it invalid by their lawlessness. And you know what's interesting about this case is it's not even really addressing all of the cases of voter fraud. There's plenty of other lawsuits that are addressing that. This is just addressing the unconstitutionality of it. It says here, finally, this would be justified, this action, this is again in his opinion, this would be justified by the simple fact that the Pennsylvania General Assembly and the elected officials of the Pennsylvania state government are all to blame for the manner in which the election was conducted. They violated the rights of all Pennsylvania electors who were entitled to vote on the constitutional amendment, adopting no excuse mail-in voting, by imposing that scheme through Act 77 in violation of the Constitution. So this sets us up for, as I said at the start, a pretty interesting week of developments in the rigged election from November 3rd, 2020. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails and comments that have come in over the last week or so. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
This was a pattern that was set by somebody in Washington because everybody else carried it out exactly in the same way. And they did it in the crooked cities.
So you think somebody in Washington directed this and directed the big cities in the big swing states to do these tweaks, whether it is the processing of ballots incorrectly or harvesting ballots, et cetera? Who did this? I mean, that would suggest this is organized, developed. Who is in charge? Who directed this then?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know who is in charge of it. All I can tell you is it looks like a very well-planned, very well-executed situation.
That's the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, yesterday on Fox Business, saying that this was organized from Washington, D.C., and then he kind of backs away a little bit at the end. I don't know exactly who, but of course we know who's behind it all. He has a lot of help, Barack Obama. He's out there on the book tour, smooth talker, putting himself in the limelight, and he's got all of his assistants like Stacey Abrams in Georgia. And what Rudy went on to point out was that you look at the way each of these cities, he didn't need every single city in America, just the one, the important precincts in the big cities of the swing states. And in all of those cases, it's a similar strategy that played out. I didn't have time to get into that more because I spent so much time on that case in Pennsylvania. But perhaps we'll come back to it tomorrow, because I think what Rudy said there is pretty amazing. Given what we know, of course, in God's church, given what we know about America Under Attack, that booklet my father wrote in 2013, given the parallels, as I said at the start of the show, the way that Satan went about destroying the worldwide church of God, spiritual Israel, following the death of Herbert Armstrong, and then the way he's coming after, the nations of Israel, organized from Washington, somebody in Washington. It had to be, because it was all carried out exactly the same way when you look at this crooked city to the next. That's quite a statement to make. And as I say, maybe I can come back to that on tomorrow's show. A few comments, emails that have come in recent days. This one from Canada. It says, last night we watched the December 2nd Trumpet Daily show, and then this morning I read this trumpet brief that you sent out. How inspiring and hope-filled. There's some hard truth that we all need to accept and even embrace. It's so wonderful to see you and your team back your father and his bold statements. I remember your dad stating that whenever he honors Mr. Armstrong, then it seems like God gives him honor as a blessing. Well, I think the same will be. I think the same will hold true for the work that you are doing. Keep honoring your father as he speaks boldly from the Bible. I feel that God will back his servant as he has done so many times before. It says further on, ever since watching your program, my wife and I try to make it a daily watch during the week. Well, he explains a little bit of what led up to him watching it with greater frequency. Another one here says, thanks very much for sticking to the truth. I understand how in the last days there will be no truth and people will be fierce haters of good, but it also says the righteous will shine more brightly and become more bold. I just got the Vision, Royal Vision magazine, and I'm looking forward to reading all the very deep articles in the magazine. Keep up the good work. This one here from New Jersey, it says, your daily program has been a true light in this very dark time of news reporting. I look forward to it, as there is no match to the accuracy of the facts. I thought that Fox News was balanced, but I see now that Satan is putting on his tremendous pressure to destroy even the little bit of truth that they tried to keep in their reporting. It says further on, my life has been changed forever, and I'm following these truths by reading and studying much of the PCG Church's publications, and am in the midst of completing the Bible correspondence course. You and your team members are in my prayers. I feel sometimes I'm all alone in New Jersey because it is mostly a liberal state, and I don't understand their thinking in not believing that there is a media mob trying to dictate our thoughts and actions. So that, as he noted, is from New Jersey. Another one here says, thank you for the fantastic show and for the reminder to endure hardness and fight as co-saviors, to be fearless and courageous, to fight for God. I, too, need to get the Micah booklet out and reread it. That's in response to a short study, or I guess it was more or less just a few points we made at the end of the show, one of the shows last week. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's show. Where does the time go? It goes too fast, but we'll have much, much more to talk about on tomorrow's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.